Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
At IHM VCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHM VCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
Public Affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years.
A changing Catholic Church. We talk with the Bishop of the Davenport Catholic Diocese regarding the legacy of Pope Francis and what could lie ahead for Catholics in the cities. Pope Francis has died the way he lived, modest, unassuming, and precedent-breaking. He was buried outside the Vatican last weekend, entombed at the Basilica of St. Mary Major, said to be his favorite church while Pope. Now, Francis led 1.4 billion Catholics worldwide, including almost a half million in Iowa. Bishop Dennis Walsh, head of the Diocese of Davenport since 2024, joined us to talk about the legacy of Pope Francis. The Pope is known for living a life of humility and service. Is that the way you see it?
I think he was a very simple man, very humble man. I think that's what people found very appealing in him, is his authenticity, his simplicity, his just a very approachable aspect of his personality. He just draws people to himself.
And you kind of forget that he became Pope during a very interesting time. I mean, when was the last time there were two living popes, basically?
Yeah, I'm sure it was a challenge for both of them, but you know, Pope Benedict was a very humble man himself. Pope Benedict sort of compared himself to a pack mule, kind of doing the Lord's work, and the Lord has made him a pack mule. He uses that image quite a bit. So I think Benedict was very happy to step back, and he didn't really... he spent his time in his residence at the Vatican, and we didn't really hear much of him. So that probably made it easier for Pope Francis.
He did it in a very dignified way.
He did, yes.
In so many ways, he taught how to do this.
Correct.
If it ever happens in the future.
Correct, yeah. There was questions whether Francis, in his illness, would retire. Francis was inclined to work, I think, until the end. I think he had a lot of things that he wanted to accomplish yet. I was surprised that after his stay in the hospital that he went right back to work, you know,
so
right
quickly.
Away. So quickly, yeah.
So. You take a look at the transformative popes in our lifetime, and you look at Francis and his roots in Latin America, which was such a rejoice, I would think, for so many of the Catholics. One of the biggest populations of Catholics, of course, is in Brazil, but in that area, geographically, that he was an inspiration.
He was, but he was Bishop of Buenos Aires in a very difficult time. It was a military dictatorship. There were people disappearing, people who were murdered, people in opposition to the government, and I think that really shaped Francis's whole vision of ministry, his closeness to the people. It probably has shaped him in terms of how he saw the papacy, in terms of what he wanted to accomplish, aligning himself with the poor, the abandoned, those suffering, those persecuted.
Let me take you back to the funeral from this past weekend. What was your takeaway from that?
You know, I always liked the pageantry of Vatican liturgies. I had a friend, priest friend, who was at the funeral. I think it's a time of rejoicing. A time of gratitude for his papal ministry, his papacy, seeing all the world leaders there, Catholic, not Catholic, non-Christian sometimes.
Church leaders from
church
other
leaders
faiths
from
as
other
well.
Faiths, other religions, and it's just a remarkable witness, I think, to the authenticity of the man, and the respect that world leaders had for him.
And also the amazing choice by him not to be buried in the Vatican, but instead picking his favorite church.
Correct. I've been to Rome a number of times. I've been to Mary Major's beautiful basilica. I wasn't aware of how special the place was for him. My last trip to Rome, we were going to visit Mary Major's, and it was closed because the Pope was there. So I think I've read where he had visited that church 130 times in his papacy. Whenever he would take a trip overseas, he would always stop at the basilica, paying homage to the icon as he would visit the church. So he was always bringing roses. So it was great during the funeral, before they bring the body in. They said Francis always brought white roses to the church. They had two children carrying baskets of roses and put them at the feet of the icon, right where he was going to be buried.
Like you said, it's the visualness and the tradition of the funeral that that's what Catholic Church is so well known for, is the traditions of in so many different ways. I was just going to say of the funeral procession, but everything else associated with the funeral, and even the selection of the Pope, which I would like to talk about more. but let's talk about the actual funeral. You said that the pageantry and the world leaders really stuck out. Was there a message that you think that was repeated throughout that really underlined Francis's impact on the world?
Cardinal Ray, who was the celebrant of the Mass, he's the dean of the College of Cardinals, and he's responsible for being the celebrant and also the homilist. I think his homily went through all the things that Francis was able to accomplish. I mean, Francis did a lot in terms of reforming the church, reforming the curia, reforming the governance of the church, opening the church to women. He was the first one that appointed as president of the Vatican City State is a woman, Sister Raffaella. He appointed a religious nun as the head of one of the dicasteries. All of those things were unheard of prior to Francis, but just the small ways in which he opened the church to the wider world. That was probably the theme that was so important for Francis, was to open the church to the world rather than an institution that's kind of turned in on itself. That was very important to him, is for the church to go out to the world and to meet the world on its terms and to be a presence and a witness to the world.
Well, and when you talk about the world, there's two other major initiatives of Pope Francis, one having to do with the environment,
right.
The other one, of course, having to do with migrants. Let's talk about the environment. I mean, when you look at what's going on in America right now, the Pope would be left of the latest political opinions.
I don't know that the church thinks in those terms. Pope Benedict said it very beautifully, that in America we are so obsessed with ideology that it consumes us. For the most part, although there would be people who identify themselves as progressive or conservative, it doesn't have the overriding sense that it does in American politics. So I think what Francis did for the environment more than anything else is that he made the issue mainstream in terms of Catholic thought. That there's always been a string within, a theme within Catholicism, that we are responsible for stewardship for the environment. But Francis takes it further in terms of talking about it in terms of climate change, that we have a responsibility to care for our common home, and it's part of our obligation as part of God's creation, is to exercise stewardship and care for our common home. The name he chooses for his papacy is Francis. St. Francis himself was known for his care for creation. So it's part of, it sounds like it was part of his thought process, his view of life from the very beginning of his papacy, that this would be part of it.
And the other part, of course, being protection of the migrants.
Correct.
And when you talk about, you know, migrants, of course, we immediately think of the southern border, but that huge humanity that left the Middle East, Syria, the war-torn countries that ended up in areas of Eastern and Western Europe. I mean, dealing with the dignity of migrants is a worldwide issue.
Correct. From a Catholic perspective, we as Catholics believe that people have a right to migrate. And governments have a right to control their borders, but they can't prevent people from migration. They can do it in an orderly way, and governments can establish laws to that effect. And it's been part of Catholic teaching, not just with Francis, and although people identify it with Francis, it's been part of Catholic teaching since the 1950s. Pope Pius XII was the first one, really, to bring the notion of migrants and the importance of migrants, that people have a right to protect their families, to move to other parts of the world for economic reasons or for the protection of their family.
Tell us where we go from now. Everybody's watching the movie Conclave. Yes. they're learning a lot. I mean, that's spiking. It's an amazing process, once again, that's steeped in history.
You know, I think we as Americans view it from a political perspective, thinking that people are vying for the office. I don't know that that's true. I think anyone who's been bishop, and all those cardinals are bishops, they know that the office of bishop is in a sense a crown of thorns, and even more so for the office of papacy. So the notion that people are vying for the office, I don't think that's really the way it goes. Again, we as Americans see everything through an ideological lens. Is the next pope going to be conservative? Is he going to be progressive? I don't know that the church thinks in those terms. I think they will look at what are the needs of the church, where does the church need to go, and they will pick a candidate based on where the church needs to go. I don't know that pushing the church in some ideological direction is often as how it's covered in the mainstream media is really the process that takes place. It is an intriguing process, and I think they have a genuine desire to find the best person for the position. I think if it were governed by whether a person's conservative or liberal, we never would have gotten Jorge Bergoglio as the Pope. He was not a contender in anyone's list before the conclave started, and most people had never heard of him. However, that was who was chosen and elected as the pontiff.
And we see that time and again, where people think, oh, this person's a front runner. No.
Yes, there's a saying in the church that any cardinal that goes into the conclave thinking he's going to be pope is going to come out as a cardinal. So anyone having those sense of aspiration for the position, oftentimes that is identified as ambition, which is not really viewed favorably in the church, and it isn't rewarded for the most part.
You're saying that perhaps the next pope isn't picked on ideological background. I totally understand that. But is it somehow picked geographically, or is age a consideration?
I would say age is sometimes a consideration. I think if they want a pope that is going to be sort of a placeholder for a little bit,
right,
until the church has a clearer sense of where it would like to go, that's possible. Geographically, I think that's also something that may happen. Pope Francis has done a terrific job in terms of diversifying the College of Cardinals. Prior to him becoming pope, it was very European heavy. Francis has made it a point to find people in Oceania, Asia, Africa, South America, more and more to make those. So there's a more even distribution throughout the College of Cardinals of the ethnic background and the geographic areas that are represented by the college.
Because as I was saying, Brazil has the largest Catholic population of any nation, but Africa is the fastest growing.
Correct.
For
Africa's,
the Catholic Church.
Africa is growing very quickly. When I was in Rome prior to my ordination as bishop, we had an opportunity to meet all the missionary bishops, most of them Africans and Indians. And just to hear their story of the growth of the church in Africa is remarkable to hear.
It has to be somewhat inspiring.
It is. They have a whole different set of problems than what we have in the developed world. The Africans, they deal with active persecution, martyrdom. There's one bishop who said, I have parishioners who are killed every month, killed for their faith. And But in the midst of all of that, the church grows very rapidly in Africa.
You have talked to your parishioners in eastern Iowa since the Pope died. What are you hearing from your parishioners? I mean, is there concern? Is there a great deal of grief? Is there appreciation?
I think that there's an appreciation for the ministry of the Holy Father. I think genuinely he is well loved by the church. Some people may see some of the things he has said as controversial. However, I think for the most part, Catholics have great respect for the office of the papacy and have great affection for the Holy Father. So I think that's where people are. I haven't heard a lot about where they want the church to go. Of course, you hear it on the sort of the margins of the church, of those who kind of dwell on the extreme spectrum of ideology of what they want. But for the most part, I think the mainstay of the church is very much open to wherever the Holy Spirit leads us.
Well, in the days ahead, it is 252 cardinals, 135 are electors because you have to be under the age of 80.
Correct.
Four rounds a day. I hate to make it sound like a sporting event, but four rounds a day and two-thirds of a vote is needed.
Correct.
That's why it does take a while.
It does. And I think the breaks, four votes a day doesn't sound like quite a lot, but it does allow a consensus to build among certain candidates. I think the first day there's one vote, and I think it's just to kind of get a sense of where the conclave is, and then after the vote, I think it's in between. I hear it's a time of consensus building, and there are no speeches or anything. It's just voting, but there are plenty of breaks for them to kind of introduce themselves to each other and to see where everybody is and where they would like to go. Eventually, a consensus candidate will emerge.
The Pope led 1.4 billion Catholics, but he's also a world leader. You can't forget that Vatican City is a government on the international stage. How do you think the Pope will be remembered on the world stage and among non-Catholics?
I think the Pope, the important voice that the Pope has is that he rises above politics and has a clear call to peace. I think he has the credibility. The office of the papacy has the credibility to continually call people to achieve some sense of peace in their peaceful relationships with each other and countries. I think the Holy Father has the moral credibility, really, to hold people accountable, to say this is what we're about. I mean, he said very clearly that war is the ultimate failure in our humanity, and that we shouldn't be going down this path. And yet we continue to go down this path. So I think the credibility that the Pope offers is just a constant reminder about the dignity of life, the dignity that we're all called to, the peace that we're all called to, what it means to be part of a common humanity, what it means to be in solidarity with one another. That's the important voice that we need to hear, which rises above politics.
Well, and I apologize for being this late into the interview without saying, welcome to the Quad Cities. You have been bishop in Davenport for mere months, less than a year right now. Any first impressions?
Well, I've been to Davenport before I ever became bishop. I've only been to Davenport once. Or I might say Clinton is where I came. I went to the showboat in Clinton about 10 years ago. I have family friends. Their son was in a show on the showboat. So I went to the showboat up in Clinton to see his show, to see him in the performance. But it's a wonderful area. I'm looking forward to getting to know the area more and more.
So. We're talking about 400,000 to 500,000 Catholics are in the state of Iowa. How do you describe the state of the church? I mean, the United States has always been somewhat of a secular nation. No religion sometimes is the top religion among people when they're asked. How do you grow the church? And do you think that it's in some ways in decline?
I don't know that the church is in decline. I think the number of people entering the church every year is growing. However, we have a large contingent of people who are older who are dying off. I mean, those who are coming into the faith are not as many as those who are dying off. We have those whole baby boomer generations.
Sure.
And that's going to be the story for all institutions within the country. But, you know, more and more people, every Easter vigil, we baptize more and more adults into the faith. So I think the best days of the church are ahead of us. I'm looking forward to being part of that, of leading the Church of Southeast Iowa into growth. My priorities as bishop is I have a great passion for youth ministry. I've had some success in youth ministry in my previous parishes. I'm looking forward to leading young people into a relationship with Christ and also into a relationship with the church.
And you could see that play out. The strength of the church would seem to be with the youth of the church.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, it's wonderful. I think once young people begin to see people their own age, peers, who are excited about the faith, I think they go forth and they evangelize their peers more and more. So I've had wonderful experiences with young people as a parish priest and being able to witness them growing in a relationship with Christ.
And as you said, you do want to visit, well, of course you want to visit more of the diocese. Is that basically your short-term goal? Is to get to know the churches and the parishes?
Trying to get to every parish. So every weekend I'm in the parishes doing confirmations. I had four this past weekend. So I go to all parts of the diocese doing confirmations. But that's really the place where I get to know people, spend time with people, find people in the diocese, and just sort of go to their churches, their parishes, and see what's going on. So,
is it important also to get rid of the mystique in a way? I mean, you're the bishop. You come into a church and people probably treat you slightly different.
That's taken me quite a while to get used to. I think I'm still not used to it, actually. So when I meet with confirmation kids prior to confirmation, I just go in, and as pastor, they know you as pastor. But as bishop, they're scared to death, and nobody wants to talk, and that makes it difficult. So
breaking that barrier is pretty, I would think, rewarding for you.
Yeah, so I mean, I usually after confirmation is a reception. It's just an opportunity for people to see me one-on-one and have conversations with me,
and let it melt away.
Correct. I mean, we're very fortunate in the diocese that we still have a Catholic newspaper, the Catholic Messenger. People read about me quite regularly. It's an introduction point where people will ask me about my dog and everything. So people seem to know about my dog. They give me gift baskets for my dog.
So how is your dog?
My dog is doing very well. Gets treated better than I do sometimes.
So. Well, we appreciate your time. Thank you so very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Our thanks to Bishop Dennis Walsh of the Davenport Catholic Diocese. May is a time when spring goes into full swing. It's a time to start enjoying the outdoors after a long winter season. So here's a couple ideas you might consider if you're looking for fun activities in the area, thanks to Visit Quad Cities.
Check out the things to do this week in the Quad Cities. Start with watching Heartbreak Hotel, which has over 40 hits from the King of Rock at Circa 21 Dinner Playhouse on April 30th. Next, there will be complimentary golf on the third level of Iron Tee Golf on May 1st from 7:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. Then, on May 2nd, enjoy Salsa Night in the Redstone Room at Common Core. Then, on May 3rd, get ready for the Freight House Farmers Market opening day at 8 a.m. And then, finally, there will be a Cinco de Mayo Taco Margarita Fest in downtown East Moline on May 3rd, starting at 11 a.m. For more events like these, visit our events calendar at visitquadcities.com.
Jonathan Turner is a longtime piano player with a master's in music education from Indiana University. He's been a journalist in the city since 1995. He's also accompanied a wide range of performers in musicals, individual performances, and church services as well. Jonathan joined us on the stage of Moline's Black Box Theater to perform one of his originals. So here's Jonathan Turner with Just a Midwest Boy.
Thank you. just a Midwest boy and a Jersey girl, alone in New York, alone in the world. Night after night, the boy and girl wondered if they'd ever find the one, or would their hungry hearts be forever born to run? They thought, where are you? Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? To share with me the rest of my life. Just a Midwest boy and a Jersey girl. One day they met online, they let their feelings unfurl. With the touch of a mouse they clicked, got together the very next day. The date she was born, on their date she was reborn to stay. She felt, I found you. Of my life. Just a Jersey girl and a Midwest boy. She gave him hope, he brought her joy. Then one afternoon in June, raining out, the sunshine streamed inside. He said, I love you. I love you. I love you. And I love you for the rest of my life. We're so happy to be here on your wedding day, bask in your glow and let you know that we love you. 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 And we'll love you.
That's Jonathan Turner with Just a Midwest Boy, performed at Moline's Black Box Theater. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.
IHM VCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHM VCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
Public Affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years.